Welcome to the Trade News Hour with Damien Barrett and Mitch Cleary.
Good to have your company on Telstra AFL Trade Radio for Trade Period 2019. This is the Trade News Hour. Mitch Cleary and Damien Barrett with you for the next hour. And Mitch Cleary, hello, welcome. St Kilda Footy Club has left itself in a bind with regards to players wanting to come, with regards to players wanting to leave and needing to have deals struck around those two players. And then also missing out on a player they had targeted already a long time, with Ben King being taken off the trade options for next year's draft. Hello, welcome. Bit to chat about Saints.
Good afternoon. Yeah, the Saints are an interesting commodity going into the final 3 days of this trade period, aren't they? Five players want to get there: Zach Jones, Paddy Ryder, Dougal Howard, Dan Butler. But the biggest of all is Bradley Hill. I'm looking at this now as, could this be a blessing in disguise now for the Saints? They've missed out on Ben King for next year. He's re-signed with that footy club for two seasons now at the Suns. They were going to always hold that first-round pick for 2020 over for the pursuit of Ben King.
Yep.
That's not going to happen now. And as Matthew Lloyd pointed out this morning, do they now go back to the Dockers with pick 12 this year and their first-round pick for next year and just get this Hill deal done? They couldn't get over the line last week, as you reported, that the talks reached a stalemate. Do they now just say, all right, we need to get this guy in, five or six-year deal, $900,000. We just need to get him over the line and the rest can fall into place.
Is that the way you read it? You read it that they now need to do that in order to have these other players then come in? And equally crucially, they need to actually get some currency for Jack Stephen going to the Cats and Josh Bruce to go to the Bulldogs. And we don't yet know what those draft pick numbers will be, but unless something comes in the door for those two players, they're not going to land all five, are they, of those names you mentioned? Dougal Howard, Paddy Ryder, Zach Jones, Bradley Hill being the big one, and Dan Butler toward the back end of whatever possibilities are in play.
I think Butler and Ryder are going to be pretty cheap. Butler, yep. I think the Tigers aren't going to want too much for him. We've seen what the Tigers have done in recent seasons. They're happy for him to basically walk and help facilitate that deal.
Yep.
One scenario I see right now is 12 and next year's first for Hill, 18 for Howard and Ryder thrown in as part of a package with that. The Jones one might be the biggest stumbling block in the middle there, and that's where they're going to need something back for Bruce and for Stephen. The Cats are saying right now that 37 isn't on the table for Jack Stephen, but I think as this one goes on and the more the Saints are willing to pay as part of Jack Stephen's wage, that they'll be able to come to an agreement.
I would think so too on that last part of that conversation, Mitch. The number 37, Geelong's next pick, and that's its fifth pick. Number 37 in this year's draft. Its next pick after that is 93. That's not going to go near it, and nor it should. 37's probably about right on that, unless they can package up those picks into something slightly higher than that in their ideal world to keep hold of some of that 37. But yeah, I do hear what you're saying about Bradley Hill, but then to do that, you're then getting back to something that they were initially balking at doing, and that is offering two first-round picks. Now, I know the number of pick has changed from this year's component. This year, as you know, when those talks broke down last week, they then, within hours, went and transacted with GWS over pick six, and in return got back at 12 and 18. So pick 12, you're saying, for this year, and then next year's first round as well, which we don't know the number of at this stage. That ultimately means Bradley Hill's two first rounders. I still look at that and think that's too much.
I think it's about right, personally. I just think six was going to be, like, six is a different ballpark to 12, isn't it?
Yep.
And then you look at next year's draft. It's already so compromised because the Suns have got pick 11 in the middle of that first round.
Yep.
If the Saints, and they think they can make finals next year, if they make finals, it's going to be at least pick 12 or later. So if, let's say the Saints scrap into that, just using this as a hypothetical, if they scrap into eighth, it's pick 12 and then pick 12. That feels about right to me for Bradley Hill.
To get done. They're going to have to start moving soon, obviously. Yeah. You can't leave five unknowns going into the last day. And I hear what you're saying about Ryder and Butler not costing much, and potentially Ryder being packaged up with a Dougal Howard scenario, given he's currently on the same club's list as that. But it doesn't leave a lot of currency for the, probably in order, Zach Jones being number two behind Bradley Hill with what's left. And they'll want to keep pick 18, I would have thought, to go to the draft with, wouldn't they?
You'd think so. So then what do they do for Dougal Howard? That's going to be fascinating.
Are you thinking 18's tied up with Howard and Ryder?
I just know that the Power are not going to accept anything less than a first-round pick for Howard. Okay. Because, and we spoke about this earlier today, Fantasia, the Power are expecting Fantasia to come all along, and their cap is somewhat tight. So a big part of the Dougal Howard allowing him to speak to other clubs, despite 3 years to run on his contract, was going to be, all right, if we bring Fantasia in, we're going to need to pay him significant money and we're going to allow something to go out. And that's Howard being that man. Now that Fantasia is staying at Essendon, I think the Power's reluctance to let Howard walk has grown in the last few days.
And so the announcement today and the public revelation that Ben King has re-signed with the Gold Coast Suns and obviously then taking himself away from the reaches of the Saints, you feel now has an impact on 2019 trade period?
Yeah, I just don't see how the Saints in any way could have gone into next year without that first round pick. So now that if King was on the market, now that he's not on the market, he's recommitted to that footy club up at the Suns, that first round pick is now go and use it. Yep. That's why I see it. And the way the AFL rules are struck is that if you trade your future first, you can't trade any other future picks. So let's just say that first round pick for next year is on the table. They can't trade out a future second and third as part of that unless they bring extras in. So it's either first round or other picks outside the first round for next year. And I think the first round is something that's going to need to be used to get Hill over the line. I can't see another scenario now where the Saints bring in Bradley Hill without using a future first.
Okay. I spoke earlier today with Matthew Lloyd on the early trade, Mitch, about Joe Danaher. His mail was, and when it comes to Lloydie, he only goes with what he knows to be the case, and that was that the Swans were offering 5 and 25, they being the first two picks in their 2019 draft offerings to the Bombers, and it's getting nowhere near any traction on that. So in limbo as we speak, still Joe Danaher, according to Matthew Lloyd.
What do you make of this? Because,
well, 5 and 25 is not going to get it done. And if that's the best they can offer, I don't know why Tom Hulley's managed to have a catch-up with Joe Danaher when he did in August or whenever it was, July. Because 5 and 25 is not going to get it done. They need to be more realistic about that. And maybe that 5 and 9 may not get it done. If you listen to some people saying what they feel they know about the Bombers too, not wanting draft picks in the draft, wanting a player, and the Swans aren't going to be coughing one up at this stage. So I don't know where they're at. I do know on the board of the Sydney Swans is one of the great deal makers of all time in Andrew Ireland, and I'd imagine he'd be working closely with Tom Hulley initially in the pitch to Joe Danaher, and I'd imagine even so right so now. But something has to give that they're not yet prepared to acknowledge in order for that to happen, and even then it's going to be a long shot from here.
We know that Essendon want a player as part of this pick. If Joe Danaher is to walk, because what Matthew Lloyd has told us, that there's no Ben and Max King type in this year's draft.
Yeah.
If they get 5 and 9, you're not going to be able to bring in a player in the top 10 who's ready-made and that will be a strong marking forward. In saying that, the Swans aren't going to want to let Tom McCartan, Nick Blakey go. If the Essendon Footy Club demand Ollie Florent or Luke Parker, that's just more midfield depth for that footy club. I don't see how that assists them in any way. Essendon need a marking forward because you can't go into next year with McKernan, Mitch Brown and James Stewart as your three marking options and expect to win a flag.
No. And as we do well know, there's obviously doubts about Danaher himself, even if his body is right to go. But by all reports, he's managed to shake off the latest problem he's had with the hip / osteitis pubis. But yep, as we talk on Monday now before Wednesday night's deadline, that one is still none closer to being done. Mitch, are you buying talk, because I'm not, of other clubs coming to Bradley Hill?
Not at this stage on the money. So he's obviously come to terms or come to a, you know, semi-agreement in principle to get the $900,000 a year.
Yep.
That's clearly a big factor in why he's chosen the Saints. Reports out over the weekend that Geelong has thrown its hat in the ring. They won't be able to come anywhere near that sort of money. So unless Bradley Hill wants to take $200,000 or $300,000 less,
times five, which becomes a massive impost for him if he is to do so. And even if he was to knock off $200,000 a year, which is a lot, by the way, in any language, and no matter who you are in any situation, that's a lot, times five. Even if he was to knock it down to $700,000 to be prepared to go to another club, That is still a high number on the Geelong Football Club list, given how they've managed to structure their payments over a number of years now. We've got an exposure to that when Paddy Dangerfield went there, didn't we? That he was not to be paid a cent more than the captain, Joel Selwood, at the time. Now, who knows how those deals have played out over the journey, but initially it was to not come in at more. Tom Hawkins still on massive money. Harry Taylor's come off the massive money that he was on, but up until this year he was on good money because of the interest at the time of him being out of contract with Fremantle. So to me, Stephen Wells is not the sort of person to do that. It'd fly in the face to on the run divert attention to someone who wasn't initially on the radar. And not just that, the other layer to that is on the money that Bradley Hill, even if it is a discounted Bradley Hill, it's still sort of the sort of money that they've only just initially given Paddy Dangerfield.
And the other part of the Cats salary cap is Scott Selwood, Lachie Henderson and Zach Smith are all coming off big contracts. All those out of contract now. We know that Scott Selwood's been delisted. Zach Smith's going to join the Suns on a 2-year deal. And Lachie Henderson's still in limbo. So there will be a little bit of money.
So what you're saying, the money is there if they want to pay it?
If they could manufacture a few other, you know, clubs always do it. They'll move money back in some deals, move it forward in some others to make room. They could make this work. And I think Bradley Hill would be the perfect player for the Cats. Some outside speed. It just showed in the finals when Mitch Duncan wasn't there. They missed a bit of that class on the outside. Jordan Clark is a young player, but Bradley Hill would be a perfect player. It's just, I just can't see it working. Not to mention the Saints demanding two first-round picks, 14 and 17. The Cats, you would think, would want to go to the draft with those.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose if you use 14, they might try and argue to use 24 or even 36 beyond that first use of 14 from the Dockers' perspective. They too, the Dockers, now probably got a bit of a buoyant way about them today when the Ben King news came through. It meant that St Kilda, as you rightly pointed out, could at least now have access to that future first round as part of conversations with the Dockers around Bradley Hill, which broke down totally in the middle of last week. And then the Saints went away and did their own thing. Brad Crouch-Schmidt, again, spoke with Matthew Lloyd earlier today on Telstra Trade Radio. And I just keep hearing and heard it regularly over the weekend that other clubs still feel that it's far from a done deal that he stays at the Crows. We know that publicly he's contracted. We know he's just come off of Best and Fairest. And we know that he spoke on that occasion that he wants to be a Crow. But there's been too much talk now, initially with St Kilda and also subsequent to that with Gold Coast Suns. And the Gold Coast Suns' interest is still real in him. Whether they can cough up what the Crows would want, we know that pick 15 would be part of that. I've got a view that's about right. I know you have a higher view than that of Bradley Crouch, and so too do the Crows.
Absolutely. I think Bradley Crouch, and he's had the chance to knock this on the head. We said this all along. Joe Danaher had the chance continually to say that he wasn't having interest from the Swans, and that failed to happen. Brad Crouch stopped short of guaranteeing his future at the Crows when he won the BNF. I just can't see the Crows allowing him to walk out in the current climate with a new coach. All the players, they're already losing. I can't see them allowing him to walk out right now. So I think he's probably got his head around that now, Brad Crouch, despite still having some murmurs of looking elsewhere.
Mitch, let's take a break now. There's already a few calls on the line before we've even opened up the Westmix open line. Andrew, Finn, Matt, Mitchell, and whoever else wants to join them can do so on 1300 23 55 48. That's the open line for Westmix hand trolleys. Those in the know, Westmix is the go. Available at Bunnings Warehouse, so you can join those names on the line. On the other side of this, on the Trade News Hour for Telstra, Australia's best mobile network, and for soap for tradies, exfoliates, soothes, and eliminates odours.
You're listening to the Trade News Hour. You're listening to the Trade News Hour with Damien Barrett and Mitch Cleary. A trade news update for Beaumont Tiles. During Beaumont's mega floor clearance, it's goodbye ugly.
Well, a landmark day in the history of the Gold Coast Suns. They've re-signed a top six pick. His name is Ben King, staying at the Suns until the end of 2022. That signature announced this morning. And Damo, a few reports circling this morning around the Pies and what they're going to do with their salary cap. Fremantle has put a three-year offer to James Aish. Obviously, the connection with Justin Longmuir, the former Collingwood assistant coach and defensive coach, now at the Dockers. So it's a big driving factor. Longmuir looking at bringing Aish out of the Pies. Looks like a win-win. Pies to clear up a bit of money and Longmuir to get a senior player to play across halfback.
And that news update for this hour was for Beaumont Tiles. Get rid of ugly with Beaumont's floor clearance. You'll be happy you chose Beaumont's. Wouldn't mind getting your take on that Collingwood situation later on, Mitch. We spoke about it earlier today on Trade Radio with Matthew Lloyd and about the need for the Pies to do some heavy lifting on contracts this year in preparation for the horrendous out of contractual arrangements they've got already in place for the end of 2020. But Before we do that, we'll go to the Westmix open line. Westmix hand trolleys. Those in the know Westmix is the go, available at Bunnings Warehouse. Andrew in Adelaide has called in. G'day, Andrew.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, mate.
Being here, I'm a Hawks man, but being in Adelaide, I see him pretty closely week in, week out. Sam Gray, I'm not hearing a lot about him at all since he basically put his hand up and said he wishes to be traded to over to Melbourne. I just think that if we can get Patton in, which looks like to be the case, and you've got young Lewis O'Brien starting to grab him as well, I think Sam Gray just working on the ground around those guys would be a massive compliment to our forward six. I was just wondering your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I really like it because we've seen Paul Pioppolo has been told he has to wait Andrew until the end of the trade period to learn his fate, and that would be a like-for-like, a pressure forward, and we know the success Paul Pioppolo has had. I was a bit surprised that Port didn't come to the party with a significant deal for Sam Gray because he played 20 games this year and was one of their mainstays in that forward line that changed a lot. I wouldn't be surprised now if he was to end up back at Port Adelaide because they'd left that room open for Orazio Fantasia. That hasn't happened. So now there is that spot for Sam Gray back in the front half at the power. And following this one a bit throughout the last few weeks, he was behind a few others in the pecking order. So the Blues have shown some interest, but he, of course, falls behind Betts, Papley and Martin. So there's a bit of interest. The Saints had shown some, but looks like they're going to go with Butler. So I wouldn't be surprised if Gray ends up back. And just part of the BNF at the power, he wasn't actually officially farewelled like the others, Sam Gray. Right. So there is that door for him to still walk back and do.
Andrew, thanks for your call. Let's stay in Adelaide and we'll head across to have a chat with Finn. Hi, Finn.
G'day, guys. How are you?
Good, mate.
This is a bit of the all-time first. I was wondering if the Crows should have tried to lure Ross Lyon in by offering a trade between coaches, Don Park and Ross Lyon.
No, look, it goes on ever so occasionally in US sport. It happened with John Gruden, I think it was, Mitch, way back in 2001, involved in a swap of coaches and draft picks, and I think it's happened once beyond that as well. But Finn, it's not in the rules here to trade. I mean, there's nothing stopping a John Northey, Robert Walls type arrangement circa 1995, but not happening. And Ross Lyon's already ruled himself out of the Crows' possibilities, even if he was going to be asked, which I don't think he was.
What do you think Ross does in 2020 if he's not at an AFL club? It's an interesting proposition to see what he does.
Yeah, if he wants to go down the media path and wants to be the man that we've known him to be on the other side of the fence, there's an intriguing role for him somewhere, whether it's matchday coverage or some other program. But no, thanks for your call there, Finn. Let's go to Queensland now, and we're going to go to Kira specifically to speak with Matt. Hey, Matt.
Yeah, love your show, Mitch and Damo. I said day one on the trade radio regarding Ollie Wines, and now we've got the Sam Andrew report today saying Carlton, they approached Carlton. Don't the Port now have to come out and knock that on the head? But I also said the Wines would end up as a Hawk. What do you think?
No, look, I think if clubs were forced to address publicly everything that's said about them in trade period, it'd just be running commentary from you know midnight to midnight every day. So, just on the specifics of Ollie Wines, we had Nick Geeshan, his manager, on trade radio last week, and while his name has clearly come up during the latter stages of the season and maybe even the early stages of the trade period, as of last week when we spoke to Nick Geeshan, and we just recapped that, Matt, when we put the question to him, and I think this you'll hear the answer here is that he will be a Port player.
Nick, this may be a really, really quick answer to a question. Ollie Wines, I know his contract, I know how invaluable he is in the eyes of Port people, but his name just keeps coming up. What can you tell us about him?
He'll be at Port in 2020.
It didn't go much longer than that, and I think that's where it's at. I mean, the build up to these moments, Matt and Mitch, are obviously different to the way they end up playing out. But at the same time, his name just hasn't come up, has it, in the actual confines of the trade period itself.
So the report suggesting that his management went to the Blues and put his name forward, not so much the power. So the power don't really have an answer to give in this, because if it's the management going forward to the Blues and say, let's make a play. But you know, these things happen so often that it could be a flippant response, but I'm sure Sam hasn't just written this.
No, he wouldn't do that. Yeah. While we're on it, Matt, there's another call. I think it's just dropped off the screen, actually, but it was another call about Ollie Wines. We may as well stick with it. Chris Davies, the footy operations boss there at Port Adelaide, again, last week on Trade Rodeo, was asked about Ollie Wines, had this to say.
I mean, you know, Nick Eason, who's his manager, I think shut that down as, yep, as quickly as the talk got down there. And, you know, Nick's a, yeah, we appreciated that at the time because, you know, these things can fester if they're not knocked on the head. But, you know, no, you know, we don't expect Ollie to go anywhere. He's contracted to 2022. He's co-captain of our club. But this is something that you don't entertain, you know, in these periods.
Yeah, it'd be staggering to see him leave now, given a lot of this talk happened before the trade period itself. Matt, thanks for your call. Let's go to Travis now in Brisbane. Hey, Trav.
Hey, how's it going, mate?
Good, mate.
I was just ringing up. I wanted to ask you about Harley Bunnell and if you think he'll go on the draft. Like, I'm an Eagles supporter, and I was wondering, do you think it's a good idea for them to chase him maybe late in the draft, use our pick 91 as cover for Willie? If he gets himself mentally and physically right, he'd be a steal in the draft, I think.
A club like West Coast could take the risk. With your 44th spot on the list, I could see a club like West Coast taking a chance on Harley Bennell and saying that they would have seen, you know, his demeanour and that sort of thing in the West. So they'd know more than us as to what Harley Bennell can offer. The Swans are the club that I'm hearing that's coming the hardest for.
Still? You've been reporting on that for a while, and you reckon they're still interested?
He was in Victoria last week meeting with his surgeon, Peter Stanton, to look through those calf surgeries that he's had. I think he's going to be up and running by January. It doesn't leave much time to get himself fit, you know, knowing that his history that he's had. So he's in a race against time. Still no certainty about an AFL list next year, but I think the Swans are coming the hardest.
I mean, a rookie list is probably the way it's unfolding for him, do you think? Rookie spot in the rookie draft?
And he's not young anymore.
No.
He's 26. He's not as if he's 21.
Played a handful of games in basically 6 years now.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Thank you for your call there. Let's go to Cam now in Ivanhoe. Hi, Cam.
G'day, mate. How you going?
Well, thank you, mate.
I was just wondering, obviously the Orazio and Joe Danaher talk's just been flogged to death, but I was just wondering, actually off that, whether what other players that Essendon have been inquiring about, or is it all just asphyxiated on that? And I actually think that if Harley Bennell was right, I think that he'd actually be perfect for Essendon as well.
He would suit their outside run. One player that they've been targeting the Bombers is Tom Cutler, Brisbane Lions player. Played 18 games last year, only 3 in 2019. He's been on the outer a bit at the Lions. The Lions and the Bombers have started discussions on him. So I don't think it would cost too much to bring him to Tullamarine, but that's his most likely destination.
Yeah, and I think the other part of all your observations there, Cam, were they just become fixated in keeping both Fantasia, which they've now achieved, and hoping to do the same with Joe Danaher. Thanks for your call. Let's now go to Nick in Richmond. Hi, Nick.
Hey there, guys. Big, passionate Essendon fan here. I'm a little bit frustrated with the idea of, you know, Dorderau being labelled, you know, the Grinch or the devil of Trade Week. If Lloyd is right and Tom Harley and Sydney have offered up, what was it, 5 and 20-odd, don't you think that's a bit cheap? It's I know his job's to build a footy team and his job's to build a strong one, but what is exactly the option for Essendon here? Say we hold Joe and he stays for another 12 months and then Sydney come big next year and we match it. Does it force a trade? What's the scenario?
Yeah, it could do that. I mean, no one has ever matched a free agency offer in the history of free agency, which goes back to 2013, doesn't it?
Yeah.
2013. So
Goddard was the first year.
Goddard was the first year, and that was the year he did leave to go to the Bombers. Yeah, look, I mean, Nick, the way you've couched it there, yes, that is a possibility. They hold him. He's a restricted free agent next year. It means the Bombers could do what they're doing this year, and that is block the trade by matching a free agency offer if indeed it happens. And I'm with you too. If Tom Harley can only cough up 5 and 25, well, he should not have wasted Joe's or his own time or his club's time by even having the process started about wooing him away from Essendon. If that is all that he can cough up at this stage. I expect there to be more, but, yeah, the posturing is well and truly still in play with less than 3 days remaining in the trade period. Thanks for your call, Nick.
I just I personally am going to have a different view. I think 5 and 25 is about right. They're going to have to pay. The City need to pay more than that. But in a fair market, that is about right. Five is a very early pick.
I actually don't disagree with what you're saying there, but Sydney started this. Sydney has got this ball rolling. And as I keep saying, Mitch, the need for Sydney was to go and get Joe Danaher. Therefore, you don't come out of this even. If they're going to have to cough up more than they felt. And as we've sort of become conditioned to now hearing, 5 and even 9, if it comes the Swans' way from Carlton for Tom Papley, is not going to appease Adrian Dodoro. And
they don't need the top 10 are all midfielders. That's what we keep getting told. They don't need more midfield depth when they are going to enter a year without, if they do enter a year without Joe Danaher. I just don't see where their goals are going to come from.
Yep. Thanks for your call there. Let's go to Nari Warren now. Sam. Hi, Sam.
Hi, boys. I've got a question about Joe Danaher and Bradley Hill, sort of like a two-part question. Firstly, if Bradley Hill gets done, Bradley Hill going to Saints and Joe Danaher going to Sydney, out of Freo and Essendon, who loses the most? Like, who's the bigger sort of loser there? And my second part of the question is, if you boys, Damien and Mitch, were in Adrian Dodoro's position, would you have done the same sort of thing that he's doing after two first-round draft picks and a player, or would you have done it differently in handling Joe's situation?
Yeah, I'll jump in quickly and then let Mitch have his go. I feel Essendon would lose more if it was Danaher compared with Hill as to who is more irreplaceable, to use that phrase. And if I'm Adrian Dodoro, I've got a strong view, Sam, that once a player, no matter who it is, says and goes public, as Joe Danaher did, with the need to get out of a club, you just get him out and you then go and do the best deal and you just somehow make it work. But I'm different. Adrian Dodoro is clearly wired the other way, and I think you are too, Mitch.
Yeah, I just think that the other layer to this is that he's a free agent in 12 months' time. That's the only bit that takes this away from other deals. So, as I said last week, if I'm the Swans and they're demanding that much, I'm going to go, all right, we'll take our two kids in the top 10 in the draft, 5 and 9, get them in, and because of that, spend overs for Joe Danaher when it comes to salary in 12 months' time and ensure that the Bombers can't match that bid. Because you're getting a win with the kids through. Yes, you might have to pay a bit more money when it comes to a salary cap, but you're saving the draft picks and you're going to get two, you know, top 10 quality midfielders for 10 years for your footy club.
Yep. Sam, thanks for your call. Michael, James and Ben, if you can, please hold on. And anyone else who wants to join them can do so on 1300 23 55 48. That's the open line for Westmix. Those in the know Westmix is the go. So Michael, James, Ben, I think Dan's just been added to that list there as well. 1300 23 55 48. This is the Trade News Hour for Telstra, Australia's best mobile network, and for soap for tradies. Exfoliates, soothes and eliminates odours.
You're listening to the Trade News Hour. You're listening to the Trade News Hour with Damien Barrett and Mitch Cleary.
Taking your calls on the Trade News Hour for Telstra, Australia's best mobile network, and for soap for tradies, exfoliates, soothes and eliminates odours. 1300 23 55 48. Mitch Cleary, Damien Barrett with you on the Trade News Hour. Michael is in Tasmania. G'day, Mike.
Yeah, g'day, guys. Look, I've got an interesting one. Do you think, put yourselves in the Suns' shoes, should they consider offering one or two and Lukosius to Essendon and coming over the top and trying to take Danaher?
Won't be happening, Michael.
He'd put some bottoms in seats.
Yeah, look, you wouldn't be giving up one and two for Danaher, just given hasn't played for 2 years properly and has still got some doubts about impact, what he has remaining. And one and two will be going for Matt Rowell and Noah Anderson. And as much as everyone, inclusive of other football clubs, can continue to knock on the door of Gold Coast to try and potentially get them to do something around one and two, it just will not be happening. So, yeah, I think all talk around it is a bit superfluous as a result of that. But, yeah, thanks for your call. Let's go to Box Hill now. James has rung in. G'day, James.
Yeah, g'day, boys. Two questions or discussion points. First, Joe Danaher. Damo, just like to take you up on your view on Danaher's trade worth. And I don't see why Tom Harley should have to come in and pay overs. I know he's come in and you know, made a pitch and got him got him essentially 1 foot out of the Bombers. And yeah, of course, he has to get the deal done, but it doesn't mean you have to pay overs. And it's, I guess I liken it to the Hogan trade last year. I don't see too many differences. You've got a guy, unique commodity, definitely worth a first and an early second pick, which is what Melbourne ended up getting. Both came with baggage in different ways. Hogan was probably 2 years younger. Both had had, you know, a career best year of similar heights. I just don't see too many differences. And Freo didn't go silly and commit to two early first rounders. I don't see why Sydney should do the same.
Yeah, my point on it is, James, there's just no point even picking up the phone and having him come round to your house if you're not prepared to actually get the deal done. And look, I take the view too, James. People look at this trade period and feel that every deal has to be win-win. Well, life doesn't work that way, and footy trading doesn't have to work that way, particularly if there is a need that the Swans have identified and the need to be filled by one player and one player only, that being Joe Danaher. If that's the case, you've got to go overs and just go and get him. And they've got, in some ways, they got the hard part of the arrangement done, that they got him to commit, and then not just to commit but to go public with it. And here we are right now. Now, they may have a plan that will get the deal done, but we honestly, as a rule in how we've covered this and analysed it and made calls around it, we're none the wiser as to how they're going to get him across the line, despite now having a fair runway into it happening.
And just on the comparison of Hogan compared to Danaher, the Demons were driving that as much as anyone to get Hogan out of that club,
yeah.
Whereas Essendon are now digging their heels in and they want Danaher on their list next year.
Yeah. I mean, James, I do agree that the pick five is a really big pick, and I wouldn't have been going after Joe Danaher from the outset for that reason. I don't know whether he's ever going to play a full season of footy again, and if he does, is he going to be as good as he was 3 years ago when he did seem to be on the verge of taking the game over? I've got massive doubts about him, but Tom Hulley doesn't have those doubts. That's why I went and approached him and got him on the hook, and you've now got to go through with it. And right now, it just doesn't seem possible, given that Adrian Dodoro, who's Dougie's Hills even more than I think the staunchest of Essendon supporters may have thought he would. So, yeah, complete watch this space still, James, on Joe Danaher. Thank you for your call and your opinion. Ben in Bayswater wants to continue talking about the Bombers. G'day, Ben.
Hey, boys. How you going?
Good, mate.
Very good. So, yeah, I've got a trade suggestion as well. So, look, I think it's a bit of a risk keeping Joe or sending him off. Like, does he play 22 games? So I think 5-9 for Essendon for him, if they can get, you know, the biggest big-body midfielder that they can get, the best midfielder with a bit of speed on the outside. And then I'm an Adelaide supporter. And then bring back Josh Jenkins. And he's going to help fill a little bit of that void, at least for 12 months, maybe two seasons, while you guys, you know, spend more picks in the future looking for a new key position forward. I mean, as early as 12 months ago, Josh kicked 46. He's kicked 60 before.
Josh Jenkins has kicked four seasons of 40 goals or more and one season of 60 goals. He knows where they are. And I think clubs are less inclined to... If this was happening 3 or 4 years ago, they might have had their tail between their legs, the Bombers, and said, we're not going to bring a player in that we delisted, especially it's the same management. So Dodoro was part of that list management team that moved him on to the Crows. As a rookie, he wasn't required at Essendon. But I think now that the times have changed where Essendon, well, not just Essendon, but all clubs are open to this possibility. You look at Eddie Betts coming back to Carlton. You look at Zach Smith, who's going to go back to the Suns. I think clubs have come around to this not being so much of an issue. And Jenkins would be a perfect fit, not only as a forward, but as that second ruck who can provide a chop out.
As much as we could gather, Mitch, last night, no significant or meaningful maybe interest in Josh Jenkins to this point. I have always felt, Ben and Mitch, it was going to be one with Josh Jenkins that would go down late, but at the same time, I thought there might have been a bit more of a linking of him to a certain club, which I'm not aware of if indeed it is happening.
Same. And the money that the Crows are willing to pay is there, but they're going to still, a club that gets him is still going to have to pay
something,
a fair chunk.
Yeah. Ben, thanks for your call. Let's go to Peter now in Yarrambat. G'day, Pete.
Yeah, g'day, Damo and Mitch. How are we?
Good, mate.
Yeah, I'm just asking about Zach Smith to Gold Coast. You reckon he would have been better suited to the Bombers?
I think the Bombers need another backup. They are looking, and Andrew Phillips has been linked to that footy club, the Carlton player. 1 year offer from the Blues. He wants more and greater security. So they are looking at another ruckman. I think the Suns still fits because they needed some backup and some ready-made backup behind Jared Witts. There's nothing up at the Suns behind him. Tom Nichols was there. He's since retired. So Zach Smith fills that role, and I think there'll be a development component as part of this deal to get him up there and some mentorship down the track too.
Pete, thanks for your call. Let's go to the Sunshine Coast now. Dan has joined us. G'day, Dan.
Hey, how you going, boys?
Good, mate.
That's good. Yeah, mad St Kilda supporter. I was just thinking, if the Brad Hill deal doesn't go through, do we chase a Tom Phillips from Collingwood and reunite him with his brother, Ed?
Yeah, there's certainly been interest in Tom Phillips, but I just can't get a gauge, Dan and Mitch, as to how conceivable it is that it might actually happen. He's contracted at least for next year. In fact, he's contracted for two more years beyond this
year.
Three more. Okay. Well, yeah, I just don't see it happening. As much as clubs can inquire and as much as his wage at some stage of this deal will reach the triggers that allow him to be on a nice number, as much as his name just keeps coming up, and I think it is just Mitch being driven purely from clubs just asking the question, maybe in an ambit way, to deal partially with what Collingwood is faced with, needing to clear something. But you're reporting that James Aish will most likely accept an offer from the Dockers for three years. There's issues with Schoenberg as well as we speak.
He's got at least a year to run, Matt Schoenberg, on his deal. I think that's the money the Pies would love to free up. They've just got to find a suitor and a home for him. And I don't think that's been forthcoming at this stage. So, you know, keen to chat to you after the break about the Pies' salary cap because they've got so much to deal with it. But Aish would be a good start to free up a bit of that cash.
Might do that. Dan, thanks for your call. One more before a break. We'll go to WA now to have it with Blair. G'day, Blair.
Yeah, how are you going?
Good, mate.
Love the show, boys. Just a left field one. Freo are going to need a few extra points with young Liam Henry, probably going to get a bid around the 10 mark. And obviously Sydney and Danaher and Essendon are having a few troubles. How about we send Matt Taverner to Essendon? Sydney gets Danaher. Sydney send pick 44 and a future second to WA, and pick 5 goes to Essendon.
Matt Taverner's name, I reckon I've fielded a few calls about him. It just doesn't change anything for Essendon because he's so much like Stewart, McKernan and Brown. He's been so inconsistent. His body has continually let him down. I just don't see another, you know, B or C grade forward on a list being any different for the Bombers.
Yeah, Blair. It just, look, I mean, the way you've couched it, you could see if someone wanted to go down that path, you could do it. But we're not hearing it at all. Actually. So I just can't see what you've outlined there being considered at all. Time for a break on Telstra Trade News Hour. And Mitch, on the other side of it, I'll just get you to take us through the Collingwood situation. We know there's a bursting point of sorts being reached. They're trying to deal with it as best they can before next year. And just what you expect to happen between now and Wednesday night's deadline for 2019 trade period with regards to how they can alleviate some of the issues they are guaranteed to have this time next year when big names come out of contract. That's still to come on the Trade News Hour for Telstra, Australia's best mobile network, and for soap for tradies. Exfoliates, soothes, and eliminates odours.
You're listening to the Trade News Hour. You're listening to the Trade News Hour with Damien Barrett and Mitch Cleary. A trade news update for Tintacar. Tintacar, darkest legal now from $295.
The big story this morning, Damo, is that Ben King has accepted a two-year extension at the Gold Coast Suns. He's going to be that footy club until the end of 2022. Zach Smith also joining on a two-year contract that will be finalised in the coming days. And as we've reported on afl.com.au, various outlets going with it as well. James Aish being offered a three-year deal at Fremantle to pair up with his former assistant at the Pies, who is now the senior coach of the Dockers, Justin Longmuir.
That was the news update for this hour for Tintacar. Visit tintacar.com.au, now offering open pay, tint now, pay later. Just on the Dockers, Mitch, outside of those incomings, are we expecting anything else?
Connor Menadue is a player from Richmond. They've shown some interest in endurance and speed. That they like his mix of both of those. So looking at that one getting done, again, like Butler from Richmond, won't have to pay much.
Yeah.
We flagged a chat about Collingwood, James Aish being a name now that will be one of the outs. You've mentioned Matt Scharenberg in the past. We've touched on just alerting our listeners to a situation around Tom Phillips, which we don't expect to have any major outcome by way of him leaving. He's contracted, you're saying, for 3 years beyond this year. I thought it was for two, but for 3 years, there's triggers within that deal that make it quite lucrative for him. He's a really good player. He doesn't want to go, and the club doesn't want to lose him, but they probably don't want to lose James Aish in an ideal world either. They're going to have to because of the nightmare that is already presenting itself this time next year. Darcy Moore out of contract, Brody Grundy, Jordan Ngoi, and Scott Pendlebury. The four big names who are out of contract, end of 2020, and something has to give, something has to happen this year in order to make that process just a little bit easier than what it is already going to be.
Of all the players on Collingwood's list this year that are movable, I reckon Scharenberg and Aish are the two players that would be most likely and easiest to lose. Because you look at what the Pies have brought in, John Noble is going to get a one-year extension. He's played across half-back. And then Isaac Quayner, we didn't see him in the second half of the year with his foot injury, or in the finals at least, his foot injury. So I think Noble and Quayner can come in replace Aish. I think of anyone that's been mooted, he's far more replaceable than a Tom Phillips.
Yeah.
So I think the Aish, from Collingwood's perspective, to move whatever, it's not going to be, he wouldn't be on extraordinary money for his final year of 2020, but it is some money that they can move off the books to help with the four players you mentioned.
Is it possible they'll do anything else beyond that, Mitch? Just to make just a little bit easier what they have to do next year. It's I don't want to over-dramatise it, but it's a nightmare, isn't it, what lies ahead for them with those three massive names in the not just the current list, but in Collingwood history to some point. I mean, the connections with Moore, obviously, the still sky's-limit potential of Ngoi, and now that they've got a back-to-back best and fairest winner in Brody Grundy. And of course, the backdrop and almost the fourth name amongst that big four is arguably their biggest name of all time in Scott Pendlebury, who won't be demanding as much currency as those other three, but equally doesn't want to be running around in 2021 for much less than what he's clearly worth.
If you were to say one thing they could still do right now, it would be Scharenberg. But I think there just hasn't been the suit has come for him as they would have liked. His body has let him down so often, and that's just the way it is. That the money he's got for next year isn't extraordinary either. But I just can't
see. But you're packing it up with Aish, potentially it clears a...
And Elliott re-signing, he wouldn't have re-signed for too much, as we read it. There was more money on the table from Brisbane and Melbourne and longer. So the Pies might have had a win there by not signing Jamie Elliott for massive money.
Yep.
I just think that to move one more would assist with the four players. And Mason Cox is the other bit down this pecking order on the players, and do need to re-sign for 2020.
Yep. So we've now got two full days and the remainder of today in this trade period. Deadline 7:30 on Wednesday. Mitch, do you see any jeopardy on any of the names we've been talking about now for 2.5 weeks?
Danaher
remains the one.
Yeah. I think Papley might have moved in the last 48-72 hours, but dating back to last Friday.
Started late last week. Just the understanding. And also, too, the Blues have, and look, some will say belatedly, got their head around needing to give Gold Coast more than a second round, be it maybe a future second round, but more than a second round for Jack Martin possibilities. Now, whatever that may entail, I don't know, but there is an awareness now that wasn't going to get it done.
Yeah, so Papley, I think, is leaning more likely to happen now than it was maybe a week ago. But Danaher is the one that I reckon we're going to be talking about right over the next 48 hours.
Yeah, I agree. Mitch, our time together today on the Trade News Hour is now up. Jumping into the AFL Telstra, AFL Trade Radio Studio, is Michael Barlow and Dwayne Russell. Guy McKenna will be their special guest. You and I will be back tomorrow on the Trade News Hour for Telstra. And Mitch, I'll see you then.
See you then.